For more than two decades, quality improvement has been a central focus of U.S. healthcare policy. These efforts have often relied on a pay-for-performance paradigm. I'm Stephen Morrissey, managing editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm talking with Eric Schneider, an adjunct professor of health policy and management at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health and a member of the journal's Perspective Advisory Board. Dr. Schneider has co-authored a Perspective article about the role of pay-for-performance in healthcare quality programs. Dr. Schneider, what were the origins of this focus on quality improvement in U.S. healthcare?
The early days of quality improvement really latched onto the notion of measurement in the 1990s as a way of driving improvement, measuring quality, and then driving improvement through the measurement. And then in the early 2000s, pay for performance came into vogue, the idea of measuring, scoring providers, and then attaching dollar figures to the results. And we've been on that journey ever since.
And what are the primary components of these pay-for-performance approaches, and how have they been incorporated into federal healthcare quality programs?
The primary components really are the notion of quality measurement and the development of quality measures, which was done mostly with federal investment, but also by many professional societies and others participating in measure development. And then the scoring and publication of reports, so publishing the results to provide transparency for consumers. And then finally, attaching payment to the scoring. And that can be done through a variety of different mechanisms. But basically, the idea is to reward better quality providers, whether they're hospitals, physician groups, or individual clinicians.
And what are the results of pay-for-performance looked like? To what extent have they improved care processes, improved health outcomes?
I think in the early 2000s, we saw some. In fact, there was some evidence emerging that sort of supported the idea of measurement as a mechanism for improvement. Once you measure something and make those results transparent, you see that providers do change their behavior. For diabetes in particular, I have my own primary care practice. Once we knew what our results were across our population of patients living with diabetes, we made adjustments and actually did improve the control of hemoglobin A1C, which is one of the early successes, I think, with performance measurement. What we've seen, though, in the last 20 years or so is a kind of expansive use of performance measurement by the federal government in CMS programs, such as the Hospital Value-Based Purchasing Program, the Merit-Based Incentive Payment System, or MIPS, for physicians, and the Star Rating System for health plans. Tying performance payments in those programs, what some people call value-based purchasing, hasn't really produced the types of improvement results that I think people have been hoping for. On the other hand, that has introduced a whole set of administrative burden and costs of reporting the measures to practice.
In fact, you say in your article that core elements of these programs, including measurement and scoring, have inherent shortcomings. So what have been the limitations of those components?
Yeah, let's go through them one by one. The measurement piece has been vexing just because the early measures that we developed, we knew were mostly based on claims data, mostly related to documentation that processes happened or didn't happen. We weren't really getting quite to the health outcomes and health status of people, patients. And then we had patient experience surveys, which were meant to record how patients were experiencing their care. It was always a hope, actually, I think, as someone who participated in the development of measures, that we would get to a more nuanced, better set of measures through enhancements through health data. And we haven't really been able to deliver that. Many of the measures in use today, you would recognize them from 25 years ago, still claims-based, still relatively difficult to implement, and don't get at the real nuances of what patients are experiencing in their care or their health outcomes. So that's the measurement challenge. The scoring challenge relates to some of the unmeasured impacts of social situations for patients, their communities that they live in, the degree of access that's available to them. And our measurement systems don't always capture those potential biases well. And as a result, when it comes to scoring, the providers, the hospitals, the clinicians who are serving among the most vulnerable with the least access tend to score worse on those measures. And then that comes to the third component, which is the payment. And those payment incentives have tended to be set in a way that rewards higher performance. And you're going to immediately see that if providers are scoring low because of community factors over which they have no control or social factors of social situations of their patients, then they're going to receive less of the incentive payment. And then these are often systems that are already challenged financially. And so they're put in even a worse position at that point, and it makes it hard for them to improve.
You write, though, that steps could be taken to create a more effective and less burdensome quality improvement enterprise. So what new approaches could be adopted? What current components could be eliminated under that new paradigm?
This is where we have accumulated evidence now over 10 to 20 years that suggests that measures are quite useful in the broad sense of understanding where quality problems exist and then targeting actions or activities to solve those problems. The current system treats those as sort of a black box that the response is up to hospitals, clinicians, and others to figure out how to make the improvements. And that's not always obvious or evident. A lot of systems have developed capabilities, especially large, well-financed systems, have developed capabilities to improve quality, but not all have those capabilities. And so what we suggest in the article is that first, we should be careful about the use of measures in settings where they weren't intended. So a measure that is statistically, we have confidence in it when it's used at a population level across a state or a region. Sometimes those measures get applied to individual hospitals or individual clinicians even, and the statistical reliability falls apart at that point. And so one thing we recommend is not using measures in situations where those measures are statistically unreliable, because then we're essentially rewarding random noise in the statistics. We end up, providers could be doing well one year and not well another year, and that if physician groups are not doing well one year and then doing well the next year and then not doing well again the following year, they start to lose confidence or really any sense of a coherent signal. And that's what can happen when there's a sort of randomness to the performance scores. So we suggest that programs like the merit-based incentive payment system, which has now been transitioned to the MVPs, we think that that program in particular could be sunset because it's adding a lot of the administrative cost and burden, but it doesn't necessarily seem to drive quality through the incentives payments that exist.
Finally, how could policymakers be persuaded to start moving away from burdensome measurement activities and perhaps be comfortable doing nothing about some quality concerns when that's the most appropriate thing?
I think this is the challenge, political challenge and policy challenge, that we feel compelled now to engage in this activity because there doesn't seem to be a plausible alternative. We actually think there are plausible alternatives, especially related to the Quality Improvement Organization program that CMS runs. But where we've seen success is in the larger organizations that have been able to implement improvement strategies. And that can require resources. So it's somewhat counterintuitive to invest more resources in poor performing hospitals or clinician groups. But they actually might give us the most benefit if we were to invest in the technical assistance, the improvement commitments, and then provide the resources that those organizations need to actually drive improvement. So we're suggesting to use the federal performance measurement systems as a sort of targeting mechanism for identifying those clinicians, those hospitals, those groups that may need special assistance, and then providing that assistance. And we've seen some states use that model pretty effectively to improve quality, because we're not really trying to raise all boats. We're trying to help the lower half of the distribution to improve. And we think there's a greater yield from that approach with less cost, because we're going to sort of may liberate some of the high performing groups and hospitals from having to do all this administrative busy work to actually report the scores.
Thank you, Dr. Schneider.